tapping out after 3 weeks. NFL, we're looking for it. College, it already happened twice. Let's talk about that. And one other thing about the beginning of the National Football League season in this edition of the Todd Wright Toddcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Many of you listen to this podcast for non-fantasy content and for fantasy content, the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast, available on many of the same platforms, including JoeBucksFan.com. My email for both, non-fantasy or fantasy content, is Wright.Todd@Yahoo.com. I thank Brandon Legal Group and Plantation Palms Golf Club for their support of my podcast universe. They both are involved with the upcoming sold-out Todd Wright Tour 52 golf tournament on October 11th at Plantation Palms Golf Club. You can get your tee times to play Plantation Palms Golf Club really any time other than the morning of October 11th. Those times are reserved for my players. It is a public facility. Also, their mini golf, now themed for Halloween, and the food and beverage and service experience is upgraded beyond the norm for sports, pubs, and bars. Everything is open to the public, not just for members, not just for those who live in the Plantation Palms development. It is all open to the public in Land O'Lakes. Also, Brandon Legal Group would like me to remind you, if you're an adult male residing in the state of Florida, paying permanent alimony, the law has been on your side for over 2 years now. You can have your permanent alimony payments reduced or potentially eliminated with Brandon Legal Group's help. 813-902-3576 for a free consult, or visit BrandonLegalGroup.com, your full-service law firm servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. One more time, the email is Wright.Todd@Yahoo.com anytime. Now, if you're asking for fantasy advice on a Sunday morning, I won't get to you before the 1 o'clock games, and maybe not before four. I've got a lot going on. But you can send an email anytime for fantasy reasons or non-fantasy reasons based on the content of the podcast, other things you'd love my opinion on, whether it's in a podcast or not. Wright.Todd@Yahoo.com, and especially write me if you pay for something. Oh, how about this? We won't pick on one particular brand. If you order club soda as your drink out somewhere and you're charged for it, I'd definitely like to know, based on some of the things I shared with you in the previous edition of the Todd Wright Toddcast. We're recording this on Friday, September 19th, just before lunchtime, 11:45 a.m. Eastern Time. There are those who are convinced, it's only Friday morning, that Mike McDaniel, with a loss, would be fired as head coach of the Miami Dolphins. They lost. However, the Dolphins were in the game until McDaniel and Tua were too predictable on a square in route to Jalen Waddle late. Film study allowed the Bills to make an easy interception. Combine that with a bad roughing the punter penalty, and the Bills go on to the victory. Would they have won without those two things? Probably. I'll say this knowing that, sure, McDaniel could be terminated late Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, whatever you want to talk about. And I did put him on my list of coaches who could be first fired, but most likely not to be around come 2026. But I've also been saying I don't think Stephen Ross cares that much. McDaniel is one of these coaches in pro and in college, protected by large contracts that pay him a lot of money for multiple years. And the buyouts / the length of the deal, and the fact that even by losing, the owners make so much money, makes them less likely to make these big changes. There were no coaches fired in the Southeastern Conference last year. The only real reason for that was because of some huge buyouts. The Deshaun Watson fully guaranteed deal has not been replicated. The buyout of Jimbo Fisher hasn't been replicated either, and it may have protected a coach or two in the SEC last year, still might be doing it through 3 weeks. So the people saying, oh, McDaniel saved his job, are the ones who are saying he would be fired after this game. They're covering their own ass rather than looking at the bigger picture. They were trying to make more of something than was actually there. You're close, you're on the right track, but it wasn't in all likely about one game. So you're trying to cover up your statement by using a crutch. I still stand by McDaniel will likely not coach the Dolphins in 2026. He could be, is in the mix to be one of the first fired. I didn't think he'd be fired after losing to the Bills. By the time we record another podcast, I could be wrong. But that's where I stand on that. Two college coaches were fired after 3 games from Power Four programs. USF, I'm sorry, not USF. I'm thinking ahead about Golish going to one of these programs. UCLA, the Deshaun Foster hire wasn't a good one in the first place, replacing Chip Kelly, and Virginia Tech. Very quickly on those. So you have two college programs. Foster had a $15 million contract over 5 years. He doesn't get the full $15 million. But you could almost joke and say, we paid $15 million to a guy and we let him coach for 15 games. Is that too soon? Maybe. Or more likely, bad, bad hire. UCLA also took on a whack job at quarterback via NIL. They traded quarterbacks via the portal to Tennessee. Tennessee certainly looks like they got the better end of that. This is a young man with a basketball background as AD of UCLA. And in replacing Chip Kelly, he failed. He went with a former alum player. And we're going to see more of this because of what Deion did at Colorado. This just in, Deion's one of a kind. Not saying none of these other former players are going to have success, but Deion's always been one of a kind in just about all categories. I was having the conversation recently at a golf facility about what happened to Nebraska. I'm from the era when I was younger and going to school, where going to the University of Miami, the programs that if Miami was going to win the national title, they had to beat Florida State and Notre Dame in the regular season. And then before we had conference title games and multi-layers to the college football playoff, you get in one bowl game, and often Miami's playing that bowl game in their home stadium. They had to beat either Oklahoma or Nebraska. So I got the question, what happened to Nebraska? And my response was, Nebraska took the money to join the Big Ten to pay all the bills, all the football bills, a lot of the non-rev sports bills. And when they did that, you're accepting that you may not be as competitive annually going forward. And they haven't been. I don't know if they'll get there. I'm not saying never, but the fortunes of the Nebraska football program changed when they took the Big Ten money. UCLA may have done the same thing when they took the Big Ten money. And UCLA's schedule and travel is much worse travel than Nebraska's. At least Nebraska is in the center of the country, more to the center, and has a number of Big Ten schools within a short trip, or can get to either coast. With UCLA, and especially that first year they were in the Big Ten, they even had a game at Hawaii. So they were going all over the place. Sure, they still get to play USC every year, and they have potential games up the coast, familiar with Washington and Oregon, but that's it. Everything else is a significant road trip. So Foster was a horrible choice by an athletic director who doesn't have a football pedigree, who now can't make the mistake again. Virginia Tech, which I knew they were in trouble, and I even just thought, man, what happened to them? Because Frank Beamer made them a thing. Granted, Michael Vick helped. But Virginia Tech hasn't been a competitor in the ACC for a while. So they fire their coach, who had a little bit longer run than Deshaun Foster did. That coach was making nearly $5 million per. I think he had 2 years left on the deal. The first thing that comes up after that firing from the AD, who's been around a while, he seems to be saying, before I hire the next coach, are we invested in football or not? He's basically making a cash call. School, the boosters, NIL. He's almost saying, it sounds like he's saying, if I don't have more, it doesn't matter who I hire as coach, because they're not going to be successful. We don't have it. Relative to what other successful ACC programs or perceived successful now and going forward are spending on football. Some, I guess, responded saying, hey, I like how the AD is sort of asking, are we in this or not? That's more important than who I get as my next head coach. It reminds me of when Fish was at Arizona doing good things, talked to Washington. Washington makes him an offer. Fish goes back to Arizona and says, can you match this? We got a good thing going here at Arizona. If you can match this, let's keep it going. And Arizona basically said, nah, football's not a priority right now. That's not the message you want to send to a head coach who makes a living winning college football games. So Fish goes to Washington. Ironically, Fish was at UCLA before they hired Chip Kelly. Reminds me of how Rhett Lashley was Manny Diaz's offensive coordinator when Miami ignored him and threw money at Mario. Who takes over these programs? Way too early to tell. But yeah, I think Lashley in play, many saying Arkansas because he's an alum. although he does have financial resources at SMU to do again what they did last year, make an ACC title game, make a college football playoff. So what's the financial commitment at UCLA and Virginia Tech going forward? A guy like a Lashley would need to know. A guy like a Golish would need to know. The head coach of USF, who, yeah, could he be a candidate at VaTech? Yeah. Based on some of his offensive principles, he might be a better candidate at UCLA than at VaTech. Just my opinion. But the VaTech coach was making twice what Golish is making at USF. It's simple economics that USF may not be able to retain their head coach if he wins a significant amount of his conference games off the early non-conference wins against Boise and Florida. So that's where we are with those programs, UCLA, VaTech, just a few. I, like many, are sort of looking at Georgia Tech and saying, could that be a hot candidate for somewhere else? He's an alum of Georgia Tech. It strikes me as kind of a Dillingham thing, an alum of Arizona State. That is a factor here. I already mentioned Lashley could leave SMU for Arkansas because Lashley went to Arkansas. These are factors. And the offensive coordinator seems loyal to the head coach of Georgia Tech. Kind of reminded me of a poor man's Ben Johnson staying for Dan Campbell, trying to finish the job for a while before Ben broke off and Aaron Glenn broke off after the Lions may have missed their Super Bowl window, losing in the NFC Championship game and then as the one seed in the divisional round last year. Okay, I talk a lot about, and I stand by it, coaching, and follow the coaching, follow the play callers, follow those guys, follow their trends, lean offensive. You can't ignore defense for winning, especially in the National Football League. How many times have you heard me say on this podcast, the last head coach with relatively no involvement in offensive play calling, offensive game planning, working directly with his quarterback tactically, tangibly, to get to a Super Bowl was Dan Quinn in Atlanta. Blew a 28-3 lead. Kyle Shanahan was in charge of all that stuff for Atlanta. Again, to remind you, Bill Belichick was heavily involved with the offense in the later years where he won Super Bowls with Tom Brady. Maybe not Super Bowl 36, 30, 38, and 39, but lessons were learned by losing Super Bowl 42, Super Bowl 46. Get more involved on the offensive side of the ball. Meet with your quarterbacks. Be able to call offensive plays. Get in those meetings. So I stand by all the things I tell you about following head coach, play callers. It amuses me, these defensive coaches who literally get head coaching jobs because they're good at calling defensive plays. They show up in the next place and they give up defensive play calling. Aaron Glenn did it with the Jets. The Jets should have not shaken his hand on the condition of, no, Aaron, we hired you because you called defensive plays. If you're not going to do that here, you're not going to be our head coach. They would have won their opening game. Aaron Rodgers doesn't throw four touchdowns if Aaron Glenn is calling defensive plays. Matt Eberflus in Chicago was a failure as a head coach partially because of his defensive pedigree. It's not what you need as a head coach these days, but also because at various times he wasn't calling defensive plays. He got it back when the HR department told him you have to fire your defensive coordinator for HR reasons. And the Bears defense got better after that. And Eberflus is now calling defensive plays in Dallas, had a good week one against the Eagles in a loss, a bad week two against the Giants in a win. Granted, with more limited personnel than he expected. And I'm not just talking about Parsons. He was down a key corner in week two and had to use a failed first-round draft pick from Florida that the Bills cut after that draft pick failed them in the AFC title game. And that corner was the one victimized on the big play to tie the game late by the Giants and force Aubrey to kick the long field goal to go to overtime, Elam. But you still need talent. Advancing to the point I wanted to make here. If you don't have, yes, you need players. It's not just about coaching. And it's not just about who you have at quarterback. You need players. You can't ignore defense, but you need overall talent. I've talked often on my fantasy podcast about I like to attribute to those who I feel do their jobs well in this business and help me do my job because of their research, because of their opinions, because of their numbers. And Mike Clay is one of those at ESPN. And he's not just a fantasy guy. No way. Mike studies the NFL. And preseason, or as Gil Alexander on Visa would say, pre-flop, he did an overall talent rank. Now, he broke it down into 10 different position groups, but he had an overall breakdown. I wrote that down, and I use it. Now, one of the things I did that shifted the number was he had Micah Parsons, obviously, on Dallas at the time of the rankings. So I moved Green Bay up a little bit, and I dropped Dallas down out of the top 20. That was me doing it. Everything else was Mike Clay. So based on those numbers, with me moving Green Bay up a bit, it's not like they were in the bottom. They've been the youngest team in the NFL the last 2 years. They're still young. They're playoff they've been in the playoffs. So I moved Green Bay up a bit, and I dropped Dallas out of the top 20. Here are who Mike Clay had as the bottom 11 in terms of overall talent. And I'm taking Dallas out because I don't know that Mike would have moved them down that far. So these were pre-Parsons trade, I think the bottom 11, in no particular order. I have some of the rankings, like Vegas was 30, Atlanta was 25, Miami was 24. The 11 teams in terms of overall talent, this has nothing to do with coaching, just based on who's on your roster, what kind of players do you have? The bottom 11 in Clay's rankings, pre-flop, in no particular order. Indy, Jacksonville, Tennessee, Jets, Dolphins, Browns, Raiders, 7 in the AFC, 4 in the NFC, Giants, Panthers, Saints, Falcons. Here's the point I want to make. We are now 2 weeks and one game at the time of this broadcast into the start of the NFL season. Those bottom 11 teams have combined for 5 wins. Atlanta has a win in week 2 against a J.J. McCarthy-led Viking team, and J.J.'s kind of had one good quarter and is now out kind of indefinitely. But Atlanta has one win. They were competitive in the game against the Bucs, but as I always say, the more close games you lose, the more close games you're going to lose. They didn't win a close game against Minnesota. They flipped the game script, and they had Algier in the fourth quarter, just keeping the clock running. This just in, is Atlanta going to be one of those handful of teams that pounds the run more than they throw this year. It's starting to look that way. So Atlanta has one of the wins. Vegas has one of the wins. They went into Gillette Stadium for the first time and won. The Raiders had never won at Gillette Stadium. That was Vrabel's debut. And despite the strength of the Patriots right now, clearly is Vrabel's run defense. That's their strength through 2 weeks. But they're one in and New England was listed in the top 20 in Mike Clay's talent rankings. But Vegas beat them to open the season to get their win. That's one win. Jacksonville defeated Carolina in the opener. Carolina's also in this group. And then Indy has two wins, one against a team in this group in Miami, and then the wild game, wild finish against second year in a row, right? Sean Payton and the Broncos look sleepwalking through the first 2 weeks. Remember last year, that was the case. And in week three, they went into Tampa Bay and won the game in the first quarter. And it was on from there for Payton, Bo Nix, and the Broncos. So, again, based on the overall talent rankings pre-flop via Mike Clay, bottom 11 teams in no particular order, Indy, Jacksonville, Tennessee, the Jets, the Dolphins, Cleveland, Raiders, Giants, Panthers, Saints, Falcons. They have combined through 2 weeks and one game because the Dolphins lost on Thursday night, 5 wins. Indy has two of them. Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Vegas have one. And Vegas's win is against New England. Atlanta's win is against McCarthy in week two. Monitor those teams based on their talent level. It shouldn't be a surprise that these teams, right? And Indy is a surprise to us. I'm asking the question. You're asking the question. Is this sustainable for the Colts? Sure, Daniel Jones gets a lot of credit for this. But don't fall into the trap of saying, well, Indy's a talented team. No, they're not. Daniel Jones just fixes some things. A big games from Jonathan Taylor fix things. But no, they're not a talented team. So they're the 2-0 start looks great. Don't fall into a trap of saying, well, yeah, they've always had the talent. No. This may not be sustainable. Could it be good enough to win the division? Yeah, it might. Houston's got all sorts of problems, and Jacksonville and Tennessee are also in the bottom teams of overall talent. Tennessee could be changing their coaching staff this year going into next year. Jacksonville just got a new coaching staff. But it's unlikely that any of these teams with the slow start are going to turn it around and be a factor to win the division or maybe a playoff contender going forward. So if you're in that camp, especially with Atlanta, Jacksonville, and Indy, be careful because the talent doesn't support the argument. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Brandon Legal Group and Plantation Palms Golf Club. Again, my email is wright.todd@yahoo.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.